This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning. It's such a good morning that I started early on the show. Thank you, producer. Sorry for jumping in a second too early. Welcome to On the Clock with Erin Green on this Tuesday, the 5th of March. Thank you for staying tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. I have a full show today. Today, the Organization for Responsible Government or Governance is with us for a conversation about government and state agency approaches to stakeholder engagement and public consultation. We will also be talking about agricultural issues, in particular agricultural theft and energy concerns, and marine issues against this backdrop. Joining us is the org engagement team. They'll be up in studio in a moment. Stefan Evans, the assistant director, and Ariana Wells, engagement program manager. I got a call on the weekend from a farmer on a family island. And he's very concerned about, well, he shared a video with me from a farmer in New Providence who's very concerned about a particular issue, agricultural theft. On the books, they call it pradialarceny. And in particular, this farmer pointed out that a number of the infrastructural deficiencies that make it more likely, or that make it less likely, that you will be able to deter or catch agricultural thieves. It turns out this is a massive issue in the Bahamas. And the issue with agricultural theft may be even larger than the energy concerns in the agricultural issue. In the agricultural world. And so, reps from Organization for Responsible Governance will share with us today some tools. We're going to be talking about tools and strategies that people generally, but in this instance, people within the agricultural space and marine space can use to engage the government, to engage the wider public, to provide more effective advocacy and to lobby for their solutions or to lobby for solutions in their spheres. So when I got the call from the farmer, I went online and started to do some research. Here are some stories that we will reference this morning as a part of our discussion. Now, I'd asked the farmer who shared that information with me to send out the phone line numbers, in particular the Family Island toll-free number, in hopes that farmers and people affected by agricultural theft will call in and share some of the issues they're dealing with, the concerns, and some of the strategies or solutions that they think will be most effective. So the numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259 and 242-300-5720, again, is a Family Island toll-free number. Producer, let's go to this call. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. May I sit with Carla, please?
I'm afraid that Carla is not here. My apologies. You've called. You're on the air. I'll talk to you later. Sorry about that. All right, so here's the first article I found. Impossible to find funds for Bahamian farming. Farmers say that they continue to face issues with obtaining finance, with a number of obstacles in their path. Cindy Pinder, owner of Abaco Big Bird Poultry Farm, said accessing financing for her business is, quote, impossible, close quotes. She said that the past 5 years have been, quote, hard, close quotes, due to obstacles such as Hurricane Dorian, the pandemic, and a chicken shortage that exhausted her business capital, and that accessing funding from lending institutions has been difficult due to them only offering cash-secured loans. Jane Brannan, owner of HomeAway Farm, said it is difficult for her to obtain the funds necessary to employ sufficient labor. She explained she has tried to expand her coconut and banana farm into other produce and even pig farming, but was unsuccessful due to the market. Lincoln Deal, owner of Eden Farms Indoor Hydroponics Farm, said farmers have, quote, struggled, close quotes, to access funding, and noted the level of funding needed for each vendor or venture differs significantly. Now, that article, the full-length article, is very interesting. The three individuals I quoted just now, they detail in the article the issues that they are dealing with. What I found most interesting is, in the same newspaper printed on the same day, is another article, agreement signed to help farmers to obtain loans. The Bahamas Agricultural Industrial Cooperation, BAIC, signed a memorandum of understanding with the Bank of the Bahamas yesterday to provide loan facilities to farmers that wish to expand their businesses and acquire land. Leroy Major, chairman of the BAIC, said the agreement will help aspiring entrepreneurs in the field to operate, and noted that the agricultural organization has signed agreements with the Bahamas Development Bank and the Small Business Development Center to achieve this goal. Now, what I found interesting about the two articles, I think these speak to exactly what I would like to speak about today. Here in one article, farmers are expressing concern about extreme financial issues. And then the same paper, same day, posted, agreement signed to help farmers to obtain loans. And I wondered, do the farmers know that BAIC was in the process of establishing a relationship with these various national institutions to provide financial support? I think this is a perfect example of what's happening in the country. Stakeholders and policymakers are not at the same table. It doesn't appear as if they're having conversations, and if they are having conversations, because I'm sure they're talking to each other, I'm not sure if they are having coherent conversations. Are they just speaking at each other? Is the state engaged in a process of consultation, which is multiple stages of engagement back and forth? Like I say, it was just shocking to me, because here are the farmers, I don't want to say complaining, but raising and tabling in the public domain very important financial issues. But the article itself gives, I think, no reference to the actions, policy decisions being made on the government or the state side. And so that's an example of what I want to talk about this morning with my guests. They've arrived. I want to introduce them so the conversation can flow more freely. And then after their introductions, I want to put another example on the table for us to discuss. Good morning. Joining us today, Stephen Evans, Assistant Director of the Org Engagement Team.
Organization for Responsible
Business. Of Org?
Yes.
Okay. And Ms. Ariana Wells, Engagement Program Manager.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Okay, so the first example I put on the table was this conversation between, well, in the agricultural sphere,
right,
between stakeholders, farmers, and I guess initial level producers, and state agencies, Ministry of Agriculture, responsible for supporting those farmers. The second situation I want to put on the table, I will lead, there have been a number of articles about it, but I want to lead with this particular article. Its title is Very Confusing: Boat Fees Needing Urgent Resolution. Bahamian Maritime Operators, and this is from the 23rd of January, 2024, the top of this year. Bahamian Maritime Operators yesterday warned the government, quote, urgently needs to resolve, close quotes, the fallout from the, quote, very confusing, close quote, suspension of 1,000% and greater hikes in boat registration fees. Paul Malis, National Fisheries Association's secretary, told Tribune Business he was yesterday informed by the Port Department that the fee, quote, suspension, close quotes, unveiled by Chester Cooper last Wednesday in his capacity as acting prime minister, does not apply to all types of boats and vessels. While the fees have indeed been suspended for privately owned vessels, including fishing boats, he revealed that the government agency told him that the hiked fees still apply to commercial craft, such as charter boats and passenger-carrying vessels. This means that tour and excursion operators still face up to four-digit percentage increases in their first-time and annual registration fees. This was confirmed by the Bahamas Excursion Operators Association president, Adonai Lisgaris, who yesterday said the Port Department told him the fees have not been lowered for charter and commercial vessels, and thus he must still pay the higher rates. The reduction in boat registration fees implemented by the government took effect from March 1st. It took effect from March 1st, and I think the increase in fees, the initial increase in fees actually took effect immediately before the lobster season started 2023. Both of these stories, I think, are great examples of where stronger public engagement, public consultation and stakeholder engagement would perhaps have provided or created the environment for more effective policy, for a smoother process for fishermen, for charter fishermen. If you read further into the article, it's a very good article for people who are following this issue. Very confusing. Boat fees need urgent resolution. It goes into detail of some of the issues that have arisen because of the lack of clarity in the policy itself, the lack of clarity in the process of negotiation and of amending the fee schedule. In particular, the NFA point out that a number of people are in a quagmire because they can't get insurance for their vehicles or their vessels until they get the boat registration fees sorted. Some people can't get renewed business licenses because they can't get their fees sorted. And for that period where the registration was suspended, people were left in limbo. And so I talk a lot about problems we're facing. I raise a lot of questions. Today, I hope to provide for us some strategies and some solutions.
Right. So this is very interesting because what we have are two stories that represent a good portion of the future of our economy. Mm-hmm. In the Bahamas, you have farming and you have fishing. And when we look at different models for economic development and diversification, we understand that those two industries are really important. And so the stakeholders that are essentially the backbone of those industries, the environment in which they function is going to be pertinent to where we go as a country. Now, with the advent of public consultation, there are so many ways that that can help with these sorts of challenges. People that are functioning and operating within particular spaces, they know what their needs are. They know what their challenges are. And even though our leaders are going to always have to make decisions on our part, and this speaks true for a number of different areas, the reality is you can only make the best possible decisions for a people when you talk to them and when you consult with them. And so if we want to be able to see these environments that are not just equitable for the everyday individual, but in the best interest of the country, because we're talking about progress in different areas that have been overlooked and have tremendous opportunity to create transformation and to build our economy, it may not be the first thing that you think of, public consultation, but it is of the utmost importance. There are studies that show that when citizens are effectively engaged and involved in decision-making processes, not just trivially, but as you said, when there is a process, a standard process of consultation, that governments make better financial decisions, which paves the way for economic development. And as we develop in our economy, what you'll begin to see is other benefits. This definitely speaks to things that can benefit our family islanders. So you see development of local economies, and there's somewhat of a domino effect of little pockets of economic development and positive growth within communities around the Bahamas that can happen. But when you remove standard public consultation, making sure that you are taking formal feedback, mm-hmm. demonstrating where that feedback can or can't be applied, because not everything is going to be applicable or timely, what you're doing is beginning to create pathways to these bigger picture issues, what we call legacy challenges, and seeing solutions toward them. So this is definitely something that we have promoted at all levels at the Organization for Responsible Governance. Consultation and participation and inclusion and representation, while those terms can be tricky for some people, it simply means making sure that you're talking to people and that you're representing their best needs. And it does represent the standards of good governance that we are promoting across the sectors.
Mm-hmm. This is great. This is great. Just let me stick a pin for a second to my listening audience, particularly farmers and people who are dealing with the issue of agricultural theft. And even for the on the marine side, if you're dealing with an issue of poaching, right? Like, and not just at a national level, but imagine like the way that we store conch
right.
on the shoreline, right? Somebody will go out and harvest conch way out, and then they come in to wherever they sort of sell their conch from. And they drop the conch in the shallow water because conch's still alive, right? So you right. want the conch to be as fresh as possible. They drop the conch in the shallow water, but if how do fishermen identify their bundles of conch versus other people's bundles of conch, right? Do they amongst themselves say, "Well, listen, this half of the harbor is mine, that half of the harbor is yours," or "I'm using blue rope, you using red rope to tie your conch together"? For people who have fish pots, right, I imagine that there's some theft there. And we know, you know, with lobster traps, even internally. So there's a question of external poaching, but there's this internal sort of poaching where we have some pirates of the Caribbean who will harvest crawfish from other people's traps.
Yep.
Right? And so I'm saying even on the marine side, there is this issue of marine theft.
Right. And while I think with challenges related to that, and I had learned a lot about that in my days with the Bahamas National Trust, that while enforcement will always be somewhat of a challenge, because we're talking vast marine areas, the reality is that we have to consistently work together to figure out how we're going to solve some of these challenges. And when we look at the advent of policy and decision-making that trickles down into the way that the individuals govern themselves, the fishermen govern themselves, if it's not a joint effort, we're not even creating a space where we can come together and brainstorm what some of these potential solutions are. And the more voices that are at that table, because I definitely wouldn't be able to come with a list and say, well, this is what we have to do to solve that challenge, although I know that it is definitely something that happens. When we create these spaces for discussion, because that's what it really is, a back and forth exchange of information, the likelihood that we could come to some sound conclusion that works in the best interest of everyone or in the least the most possible people is heightened, and it creates a better environment to sort of chart the way forward. But that is definitely one of the challenging issues that exists in that space.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking as we're talking, perhaps one of the strategies that we can take on is like at a cultural level.
Right.
And let's disrupt our common understanding of this word complain.
Yeah, that's problematic.
Right? Because if we continue to label people raising concerns about issues that affect them, whether coincidentally or directly impact their lives, if we continue to say, well, these people are just complaining, then we are dismissing the value of, well, I'm going to say we are dismissing a whole bunch of things. I think we start off by dismissing their role as a citizen to participate in governance,
mm-hmm.
right? We say, oh, shut up, you're just complaining.
Right.
As opposed to, listen, you have because this is, I would respond, you have raised this issue so many times, right, that I'm now going to start encouraging you to work towards a solution.
Right.
As opposed to, say, you just complaining. That you said it 1,500 times should suggest to me that it's a crisis for you, as opposed to you just a complainer.
Absolutely. And the reality is, when there aren't regular spaces for people to express themselves, a lot of times the first time we hear about a challenge, it's already catastrophic. Mm-hmm. And so when we create regular spaces, and this is definitely something we had to learn at Org, what we found was that we would have projects, and of course, as a nonprofit, we still have to operate on grants and projects, but those would be our only opportunities to go and talk to people. And so we've been working on a strategic plan where we can at least lay out, like, this is our goal, this is the standard. So we want to make sure that we are out there and listening to people on a regular basis so many times per year, mm-hmm. with regard to the work that we're doing. And so these public consultation stances, they do apply to the private sector and to civil society as well, just to be clear. But when there aren't regular spaces for consultation, by the time you hear about the thing, it's going to be pretty bad. And so that's one of the things that we would definitely put forth for consideration within all of the ministries, within all of the decision-making spaces. Are there pockets that we could plug in around the islands to make sure that we're reaching people that are typically unreached for those consultative processes? And sometimes you're not going to like what you hear. Ari can attest to the fact that we've been in a few focus groups within communities, and we had to remain neutral. And and even if we didn't necessarily see eye to eye with what someone said, or even if we outright disagreed with someone's stance, if not from Org's perspective, from our own personal convictions, the reality is it is more worth it than not to create that space for people to feel comfortable to come forward.
Right, because at that point, the space is not about assessing the value of the contribution.
Right.
It is about collecting as many contributions as possible.
Right.
And so then you can make sense of the contribution, because the contribution is always valuable in context.
Right.
Right, whether it's in the context of their personal life experience or a wider communal context. Or like a community may say, look, yeah, that's just one person in our community having this issue. But if you take it broader island-wide, you realize that the majority of communities are actually facing this issue, mm-hmm. even though it's only a small percentage of people in each community dealing with it.
Right.
So an idea that came up, a suggestion, maybe we need public soapboxes, right? Or we need a public opinion booth.
Right.
Right. A space in the public domain that somebody can go into and either write a comment. I know lots of people don't like to write, but it gives you a degree of anonymity if you write, right?
Yeah.
Or even a function where you can make a video or an audio contribution anonymously, in the sense that your face is hidden and your voice is distorted.
Right.
So you're clear enough to hear what you're saying, but we don't necessarily capture voices, right?
I think it's so interesting because I feel like people use Org as a space where they speak about the issues that they face with society, whether that be with the private sector or the government. We hear from people that have these issues, and sometimes we spend hours on the phone listening to their questions, comments, and concerns.
And I think what's interesting is, I think that's a splendid idea. But what that makes me think about is, first to your point, that I do think that as civil society, we have a role in creating this bridge. One of the things, as I said, Org, our primary responsibility is simply to promote the principles of good governance. Doesn't happen without the foundation of public consultation. But mm-hmm. to Ari's point, we have definitely recognized that because of the culture we've created, sometimes people are uncomfortable with even going to those spaces. Mm-hmm. Being anonymous is one of those things that could be quite helpful. Doing it through a local CSO is another thing. But I will add to that by saying, I think when we collect particularly written data or things that we are able to speak to people about or just collecting that feedback at face value, there's also a need for town halls and focus groups. And I know for some folks it's played out, but what it does is it allows us to triangulate the information. So we've been doing a whole lot of this lately where you could get a survey response that says, I don't think that this thing is this, or I don't think that that's that, but the answers are going to be limited. Or even if you just take in something verbally and don't get the opportunity to explore, you'll find that there are so many little nuances where maybe something that you thought was big was not the most important issue, or maybe something that was really, really important was undermined. And when you sit down and talk to people, and it's not easy work, it's very time consuming. When you add in family islands, it's really expensive, but it is worth it because we won't get to the relevant solutions unless we collect and are able to decipher and really understand what people are saying.
Absolutely. Fear of victimization, right? People are, and so this is something that I've encountered as an advocate, right?
Right.
And even on issues that I've raised on the show, people are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be identified as a troublemaker, labeled as a troublemaker, and thus marginalized from or pushed away from opportunities.
Right.
Right. They don't want to be seen to be embarrassing a party or an organization that they're affiliated with.
Right.
Right. And in many instances, people are actually, they're clued into the issues. They have solutions at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They could tell you, oh, man, look here. This is how we could fix this right now. But they don't want to take the next step of public engagement because of concerns. Right. And this is valid. Because we understand the existing political culture.
Right.
Right? We understand what happens off air, what the conversations people have in less traditional media spaces. And so I understand when people say to me, man, Green, this is an important issue. I appreciate what you're saying, but I can't take that next step. So how do we, you know, these spaces that allow people to engage anonymously... Yeah. Or like you say, civil society organizations play a role. They fill a gap.
Right.
They should be a vehicle that people can use to say, hey, I can't say this out loud. I'm presenting the information to you.
Right.
Can you find a way to say it?
And I have actually heard that on several occasions, just to be completely honest. We've gotten phone calls where... You know, we're in meetings and then all of a sudden we have to give half an hour to someone that's just like, I can't say this to nobody else and I see y'all out there. And we appreciate everybody that is supporting what we're doing. But from a personal note real quick, I will say this. Our culture, which we all have the ability to change, is not like a storming the castle, but it is problematic the way that it is, some portions of it. When I did community work before my time at org, I had never, ever gotten any, who you affiliated, which party, like, never any sort of questions like that at all. And I came in basically green to politics, I having a community engagement background. And so for the first time, I'm like, well, I'm just out here doing what I always been doing. Like, I'm just trying to help people and build public consultation and help with the development of systems. But now, all of a sudden, people want to know which party I work for. And I, you know, we're not anti-political, but we're definitely a neutral organization. And so I'm not opposed to any party. But at the same time, the fact that I'm speaking up for a system and people automatically now categorizing me as having to be an agent of one or the other or one of the independent groups was very, very concerning. I was honestly taken back. I'm like, Steph, what you getting yourself into with this org stuff? But I realized that because there were so few people doing it, that it was definitely a signal that, you know, what we were doing was necessary and there would be some discomfort. But it would be up to us to kind of shift that cultural mindset that it's all of our responsibility to speak up and to basically have a hand in the pot to make a difference in our community.
Absolutely. Sorry, there was a call just now. Caller, you were only there for 3 seconds. The producer didn't even get to touch the button. Please call back. In fact, to the audience, I'm really looking for people, if they would like to share instances of agricultural theft. Things that they've observed, things that they've witnessed or they've experienced. I want to say, don't be afraid. You ain't snitching on nobody.
And right. Just to add on to what Steph was saying before the call, I think people confuse government with governance. As soon as they hear the Organization for Responsible Governance, they assume that we work for the government. And that's not the case. And it's really on our organization to make the term governance more accessible and available and something that we use in everyday society. Because we all have a right to active citizenship.
We do.
In fact, you call it a right. I call it a duty. We all have a duty to be active citizens and to engage in these processes. And I say in the absence of state-created mechanisms, like the Anglican Church will call it the mechanism of listening ear, you create a space for people who you know are marginalized from the church in the state, from governance processes. People you know who are less inclined to come to a town hall meeting.
Right.
As a state and state actors, state agencies, you have an obligation to create mechanisms to capture these voices. It's not sufficient. And we talk now about shifting political culture. It's not sufficient to say if they wanted to know, they would know.
Right.
If they cared, they would have been at the meeting.
Right.
That's not sufficient. You actually have to acknowledge the barriers that prevent people from participating in these processes and then work to eliminate or minimize those barriers.
Absolutely. And I think that is a really good point on it being a duty, because when people, so the universal truth here is that when people aren't involved, systems won't be effective or as effective as they can be. So that is both on the side of government responsibility to create spaces, but citizen responsibility to participate in those spaces. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to oversimplify it, because to your point, there are barriers and there are very reasonable matters that people, or very reasonable conclusions, I should say, people come to in their minds as to why either it might not be in my best interest, or I might just be wasting my time, because that's definitely one of the matters of feedback that we've gotten from the public, that, yeah, I believe in what y'all are talking about. And I think that this makes total sense. It is logical that if you talk to me about my challenges, you'll come to good conclusions. But I'm not going to waste my time, because no one's going to listen to what I have to say. And that doesn't automatically mean that it's necessarily true. But one of the key things that we've been working on lately is this matter of public trust. Mm-hmm. People don't trust the system. And so if they don't trust the system, and this is not just a jeer at the government. We've been doing a few studies, and Ari's been on the ground in several communities. I think we did 4 or 5 islands in the past few months. People don't trust each other. People don't trust us as nonprofits. Mm-hmm. People don't trust the companies in their communities. And it's not like zero trust at all. But this is to say that there are degraded levels of trust in government, in private sector, in nonprofits, and in we ask folks if they trust their neighbors, and they're like, I trust this one, but I don't trust that one.
I trusted this one ain't gonna never break in my house. I know that. But that mango tree now.
Literally, we've heard comments like that.
Trust, they can eat mango, right? And so I love that, the varying degrees of trust.
I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the project, because I already took lead on it, but we're still sifting through a lot of the information that we got through focus groups and some surveys that we put out that are still available. But it's been an interesting journey to kind of venture into that land of consultative processes are difficult when there's no trust.
I think the most interesting thing that I found through traveling to the different islands is that even though people feel like trust is eroded, they also feel like there's an opportunity for trust to come back. They feel like through tangible ways that people, that the government and different private sector entities, if they were to actually tangibly follow a track record and have a proven way to show actionable steps toward trust and building trust, then people are more likely to trust them again. So even though there isn't trust now, that's not to say that there can't be trust.
Right.
But it's a two-way street. Just as we need people to be more actively involved, we need these other governmental agencies and private sector agencies to want to be transparent so that people can trust them again.
Mm-hmm. And I think a universal thing as well is that, and that's a really powerful point, because it can be daunting to do this kind of work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, when you talk to people, even when you have to sift through difficult conversations and what is perceived as complaints, you see pathways. Because people begin to say, well, if they did this, or if, even if my neighbor did this thing, maybe I would trust them more. Or some things were related to things, just how long a thing has been around or how regular a certain practice was. So maybe your first consultation may not be well attended
mm-hmm.
because people don't trust that right off the bat, like this thing is going to do what it said.
Absolutely. Producer, let's go to that call. I'm really excited. I'm hoping that people call in and talk about some examples of agricultural theft, right? Some of the things they're dealing with. And for me, it's a point because the first time I saw the sign, I can repeat this over and over again, on Cowpen Road and Golden Isles Road intersection that say, stop radio larceny, right? I was like, you're trying to cause accidents here. Because what radio larceny even mean? I could be in my car losing my mind. Let's go to the call. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
I'm Farmer Jones.
Morning. Thank you for calling.
I don't know if you want to get with the incident where when curfew was 7 p.m.
Okay, when we were in the lockdowns and curfew was 7 p.m.?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Okay. I'm the farmer who shot that guy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Now, before you go on, has your case been dealt with before the courts?
It's been dealt with. It got thrown out.
Okay. All right.
Now,
yes, sir.
Curfew was 7 p.m. at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Current is off.
Mm-hmm.
It is raining. It is 2 a.m. in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
January 29th.
Mm-hmm.
The guy came in, him and his, I guess, foot soldiers, came, they started to attack me.
Mm-hmm.
After they done took all of my goats, all of my sheep, all of my geese.
Wow. Wow.
And the majority of my dog.
Oh, wow.
I caught them at the last quarter, and I had maybe about 40 chickens left from 218.
Wow.
Now, my chickens are different chickens. They lay green, light blue, olive green, and pink eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the guys came. I fired. If someone come and at you,
Speak a little louder for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
People coming at you after 2 in the morning, current is off. What you supposed to do? Stand above your shoes and get chopped up or defend your life, property, and livelihood, your livestock.
Mm-hmm.
I was on trial
mm-hmm.
for causing grievous harm.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the guy who was apprehended in the delivery scheme, he got slapped on the wrist. He spent maybe a month and a half in boxes. He wasn't charged for trespassing. He wasn't charged of attempted murder. He wasn't charged for armed robbery. He wasn't charged for breaking and entering twice because he broke into my fence. He broke into a building. And then he broke into another building. Sorry, he broke into his street lines.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't charged for any of those things. It made the news and everything. A few farmers stand up and tried to help me out while I was locked up.
Mm-hmm.
But farmers like myself ain't safe, you know, because this happens all the time. And when you report it to the police station, they laugh at you sometimes.
Yeah.
While I was apprehended, one of the guys, foot soldiers, came to the police window where the guy was locked up. And said in Creole, look here, since June's already locked up, you put fire on June's place. I told the sergeant at the time, with the other guy saying to the window, to the other fellow who was locked up at the same time as myself, saying what they can do. So 20 minutes later, the police got a phone call saying, fire on June's farm. I told him what was going to happen before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
My brand new car I got for my daughter for graduation from Prince Will got burned down. They started to put fire to my house. A neighbor drove his car through my gate to put the fire along with my sister husband.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been able
Yes, sir.
That just went down the drain, right? Just like, oh, the fella spent a month and a half in foreclosure. A month and a half. All of my animals gone.
Thank you for sharing this story with us today, sir. As you were speaking, I could think of a number of strategies that should have been in place, mechanisms that should have been in place to prevent that or to make it less likely that they could get away with it, to interdict, right, to stop them in the act. And the first thing I want to say is there a singular association representing farmers in the farmers and the people who raise livestock as well in the Bahamas? Oh, he's gone now. Okay. Producer, we're going to go to the break. When we come back from the break, we maybe throw some suggestions on the table to respond to what is a tragic situation. You guys stay tuned to On the Clock. We're there in green. We have Org in the building with us. Caller, hold the line. We'll be right back. The most prominent thing is this. You can now
listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green. We're going to take the second call quickly and then we're going to go into solutions and strategies. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, the call was dropped.
I okay, sorry about that. All right, so the question I had was, is there a single or singular association representing farmers in the Bahamas?
Yes, ma'am. There's a few of those, you know. There's okay. Babco, there's Bahamas, Margie, entrepreneurs, and there's Westbird Production.
Okay, so here's my response in terms of strategies and solutions. The first thing is that it appears as if we only think that property and fancy things have value, right? And so the agricultural community needs to show the state the value of the work they do, and in particular, the percentage of like the GDP yeah. of the national economy that you produce, right? And so we need an agency or an association that is constantly assessing farms, farm entities, properties, and tabulating, producing the economic value of these things, and then juxtapose that economic value to the broader economy. Maybe that will drive a shift in perspective on the value of agricultural property and agricultural work. The second thing is we need possibly an agricultural unit in the RBPF, right? A unit whose job it is to patrol agricultural spaces.
Yes, ma'am. We did put in production. It's just that it keeps getting knocked down.
Mm-hmm.
If it was probably privatized, then it could be possible.
Well, listen.
Going through the other powers that be.
Yeah.
They won't allow it to happen. Could you imagine now someone like myself, a young farmer who knows what they are doing, supplying the country with food? They don't want that to be. You understand?
Okay. So is the merchant class and the merchant class culture, does it exist as a barrier, right? Because proponents of the merchant class say, hey, it's cheaper we just bring this food in. It don't make sense we spend all this money growing food. As a part of it.
We could be compatible.
I got you.
Those other guys.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's just that the powers that be won't allow it to happen. We're okay. The only country that talks about food security, but don't allow it to happen.
I got you. Okay. Here's another suggestion. There's nothing stopping private citizens from creating a security firm, a business, properly licensed business, whose focus is on agricultural properties. That company could even possibly get a grant or a contract from the government to provide the service. I just throwing it out there.
Some grant, curry favor.
I got you. I understand exactly what you're saying.
Many so-called farmers who need farmers got grants. Mm-hmm. I'm a fifth-generation farmer. I've been trying to get grants for the last 27 years. I help others get their grant. I did the same thing myself, and I haven't gotten it because I'm not a government crony.
Now listen, the association that you're a part of, here's what y'all need to do. You need to identify an officer, right? An individual in your association. They need to be the Ministry of Foreign Affairs liaison. And their job is simply to research our Commonwealth partners and international partners that offer grants, right? Many of them have to come through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And their focus is simply to identify potential grant opportunities and link the Ministry of Foreign Affairs with them if that's necessary, engage them as a civil society entity by themselves, or to engage the Ministry of Foreign Affairs directly to ensure that the farmers' associations are aware of every single opportunity that's directly related to them or even coincidentally related to them.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
If I have an investor who wants to invest in me, mm-hmm. especially in the food security area,
mm-hmm.
Should that investor go with his plans and ideas to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs or the Ministry of Agriculture so that he could bring his money into the country and help the farmers?
He's going to have to do both. He's going to have to do both, right? Both agriculture and foreign affairs or whatever state entity provides oversight for external investment. But I think, right, like, I appreciate what you're saying. Absolutely. It doesn't appear as if the state is concerned, evidenced by the lack of mechanisms, right? There are not commensurate mechanisms in place in terms of the level of concern, complaint, and issues, right? Drones. Has the Farmers Association considered investing in drones for night patrols of agricultural property?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, right? This is another thing. And again, you'll have to speak with the Ministry of National Security, identify yourself, your drones, your program, and so they'll be aware of what's happening. Listen, I want to say thank you very much for calling. Here's another thing. Does any farming association have a legal fund, right, where through their dues, part of the dues are put in a fund to support farmers like yourself who may be brought before the courts and you saying I was simply defending my life and my property? Does that exist?
Yes, we have some costs that we pay.
Okay, because the second fund is that y'all need to start a fund right away to start training some agricultural lawyers, right? Like identify, if you could create a scholarship, identify a mechanism so that we can begin building our local human resources inventory.
Yeah, that sounds like something I can talk to him about, because he has been trying to bring in the money into the country to help farmers in general for the past 17 years. He's been declined by every government.
I understand.
Just 2 weeks ago, he tried to meet with the prime minister to no avail. His secretary laughed at the man, and he made mention that what the man came to see the prime minister for.
Thank you, sir. I want to thank you very much for sharing with us today your personal experience. It has been, you know, just a short time, but I hope that we have offered some suggestions and strategies that you or other members of the agricultural field will explore and determine whether they are suitable for what it is that you're doing or the issues that you're facing.
Okay. I have one more question.
Yes, sir.
Wi-Fi.
Speak up for me.
Wi-Fi was taken from you, right?
Yes.
Now, they said once the case has been thrown out, I could get my firearm back.
Yes.
It has been 2 years now. They can't find my firearm. Who could I go to in order for me to find my firearm? Because they have it now in bad faith for the license. And when they took it from me, it was licensed up to date that same month.
Mm-hmm.
But when I bet him, I go to check on it. If we find your gun, you'll have to pay back pay. If we find your gun. I mean, if. My gun is a brand new gun. You'd compensate me for that gun, right?
Well, this is it. I mean, so here's what I'm going to say. We need a lawyer. You need a lawyer for this one, right? What I'm saying is don't frustrate yourself trying to engage what appears to be a ridiculous conversation. Get a lawyer. Tell the lawyer the purpose of his engagement is to retrieve your weapon or to seek recourse for the loss of your weapon.
Yes,
sir. Listen, thank you very much for sharing this morning.
And if I may, the only thing I could say, because we definitely don't have the background or expertise to get into any of the specifics, but in just listening, there are so many things. It's the power of listening. So many things that come forward. Like, my ears are just ringing off where I'm hearing aspects of matters that probably happen more regularly than we may be aware that can be dealt with through government. And then you talked about some private sector interest in combating some of the challenges and even civil society and association-based approaches to coming together collectively to brainstorm. When we tap into that part of it, challenges like these, we can begin to see better, sustainable, and more long-term resolutions. And in the absence of that, unfortunately, I'm not going to say that things like this are going to continue to happen, but what's stopping other people from experiencing very similar things?
Absolutely. Like you say, listening is the most important part.
Yes.
The most important part of public stakeholder engagement and public consultation is the listening part.
Yep.
And I want to remind state actors that there's no such thing as a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
A complaint is free consultation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a service that you didn't have to pay for.
Right.
The only thing you pay is in time to listen.
Right. And if I could, we do have some resources around public consultation that will be good for public officials and different folks. It does look heavily at the legislation process, but it also, there are a lot of really helpful tidbits that can be found on our Policy Review Center. So that's orgbahamas.com/policyreviewcenter. And there are two versions. There's an executive summary, a short version, and then an extended version. It's maybe 10 pages or so that outlines like what are the principles of good public consultation. And in that same space are all of the other efforts, like Access Parliament that you talked about last time we were here, and some of our other initiatives that promote this idea of regularizing at every level listening and good public consultation.
Absolutely. I think it's March. That means, well, I know it's March, but I think that means Cooperatives Week is coming up. I think there's a cooperatives conference this year. So farmers, people in the marine industry, aquaculture, now is the time. Tune into this month's events around cooperatives and determine whether you can use a cooperative to strengthen your sector, to strengthen the work that you do as an individual in that sector, or that maybe you have some tools, tips, some information and experiences to share that may build the capacity of other actors in the space. Yes, producer, play that music. Text, the foreign investor should go in along with the Bahamian partners, of course. I had an elderly relative whose life was threatened by a man stealing mangoes. I have serious concerns about what will happen on cannabis fields, because the people coming to steal cannabis ain't that little boy on the side of the road. Thank you for that text. Text, are we all out of time? And I got to end the show with this. Never before have I've never valued as much as right now the Bahamian tradition of a question and a comment at a town hall meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question and a comment, because the comment is to give context so you could better understand the question. You guys have a great day. Producer, thank you for not hitting that button. It's my fault. It's my fault. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry is up next. ¶¶